This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Mully and Hall. Mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
You have to trust in the next guy up. You have to trust in your trainers and trying to get guys back as soon as you can. You have to trust in the plan and knowing that every year is a little bit different. And you can't be swayed one way or the other just because you said, oh, no, it's everything's peachy just like last year. No, it's not last year anymore. We made that clear. This is a new year. There's going to be different types of adversity, and how are we going to handle it?
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is Matt Nagy, and we are delighted to welcome in Rich Campbell. Rich, of course, the Chicago Tribune Bears man. He joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram Hotline, home of the real deal. Good morning, Rich. How are you?
Morning, Rich.
Great, guys. Readjusting to Central Time. Feels good.
How was it? How was your trip? Not was how really was fun. Their trip. Was that really was horrible. Fun. But your
yeah,
trip,
yeah.
We were interested.
No, they didn't. I don't worry about them. Yeah, ours was a lot of fun. We went to Craven Cottage, as I told you guys on the show last week.
Awesome.
Saw a 2-2 draw. It was a lot of fun. Ate some British pub food and good food all around. And yeah, had a great time.
That's great.
You know, Rich, you write today in the Tribune, and you look at a couple different aspects. One of them regarding how the Raiders defended or attacked Khalil Mack. I guess they prevented him from wrecking their game plan, and they did it effectively. And you haven't seen that very often. Actually, I'm not sure if you've seen it at all since he became a Bear. What did you take away from the way that they approached it, and how many teams ahead on the Bears' schedule will try to copy that?
Yeah, the Raiders devoted multiple bodies to Khalil Mack on 50% of the snaps in which he rushed the passer. And he was in for 28 dropbacks of Derek Carr. And on 14 of those, they either had two offensive linemen on him, a tackle and a tight end, a tackle and a running back, two tight ends. I mean, they put experienced blockers in front of Mack and basically said, you're not going to beat us. You're going to have to go through or around us. Now, the Vikings did that a week ago, and he did go through those guys, but the Raiders did a better job. And I don't understand why every team doesn't do this, especially in the case of Sunday's game when the Bears were without Akeem Hicks. They're just not as good rushing the passer. But Leonard Floyd on the other side didn't have the type of success against one-on-ones that he needs to have when teams devote that type of attention to Khalil. And I think it just makes sense for every team to do this. I don't think it takes some type of big leap outside of every team's normal game plan to double a guy, to chip Mack, but he'll ruin your game. He'll turn the ball over. He'll create a short field, and he'll be the difference between winning and losing for a Bears team that can't score offensively, that needs those plays by Khalil Mack to win. As we saw, if you don't get him, you got a great chance of beating the Bears, and the Raiders were smart and really effective. It helped that their offensive line was really good, really big and really good. I know you wrote about that a little bit today for the Tribune, David, but yeah, their blockers were excellent.
And I think when you think about the way they blocked as well, you talk about the chop block in there. If it's just one guy, they're just going at your legs. I mean, they were diving at people throughout the course of that game, and that is obviously pretty scary when you're a defensive player to have somebody coming at your knees.
Yeah, and it takes a lot of practice to get that right, because there were times when the Bears tried something like that. They had a run for, I believe it was either -1 or 2 yards. Cody Whitehair dives at the legs of the defensive tackle. The defensive tackle just kind of brushes him off, steps over him, and goes and makes the tackle. And that was the difference between execution from the Raiders line, which was awesome, moving guys out off their spot, and the Bears line, which can't move anyone anywhere. And you could say, all right, yes, this is a great way to approach offensive line blocking, because I agree, it's effective. Guys who are 300 pounds on the defensive line don't want their legs rolled up, but it takes a strategic commitment. This is unlike that double team strategy that we were just talking about. You've got to practice this. You've got to be in that lane all through training camp to get the timing of that down and to get the commitment to get your own guys offensively on the ground. Because once you make that cut block, these linemen aren't getting up and getting somewhere else. And the Raiders' timing was excellent. They were doing it illegally at times. Some of the chop blocks were illegal that weren't called. But they did an awesome job of cutting down the Bears and creating these cutback lanes that we just haven't seen the Bears' defensive line concede. I mean, usually that's a wall all the way across, and suddenly you're seeing Eddie Goldman on the ground,
right,
and Nick Williams on the ground. They really, really missed Akeem Hicks and Bilal Nichols in this game for their size and strength. And we'll see how quickly those two guys come back, because I don't think a team dominates the Bears' front the way the Raiders did if they have those two starters in the base package back in the game.
That Hicks injury looked awful, and he was,
oh, it was gross,
apparently screaming in the tent and everything. Any idea? Was there any other damage? I mean, they're very mum about it. Be very curious to know how long that's going to last. I guess Bilal Nichols is going to try to play with a club hand. Is that it?
Yeah, so the Hicks injury first, yeah, that looked disgusting. I mean, you could see very obviously from the replay, there was deformity in that elbow, which makes you think it's a dislocation. The question would be, if it were a dislocation, was did anything chip? Did any bone fracture occur when that happened? We don't know that yet. That would be the difference between Hicks being able to come back and play with a brace or having to miss a long period of time while that bone healed. Because if it's just a dislocation, there's a decent chance that he could play either against the Saints or the week after against the Chargers.
Right.
You put a brace on it, and you try to protect it, and you let him go play, see what he can do. Nichols, yeah, Matt Nagy has talked about the problem for a defensive lineman. It's a little bit different than when Leonard Floyd couldn't use his hand last year. Nichols has got to be able to grab. Got to be able to grab onto a defensive or offensive lineman and help control, you know, his point on the field, not let these linemen get to the second level on the linebackers, which is what the Raiders did so well. And so it's been, what, 3 weeks now, 4 weeks? So it would seem that this is the target for Nichols coming back. And not to say that they need him in a way that maybe they need Hicks, but when you see how they got pushed around against the Raiders, yeah, they need him, because overall, the defense has to play well for the Bears to win. They don't have an offense. This is a one-sided team, you know, through 22 games of Matt Nagy's tenure. And so all these guys defensively, remember how healthy they were a year ago? Well, that's where they need to get back to in order to be playing their best.
So let's look at the running game. We've been talking about it. We've been writing about it. It's the topic that is, I think, the most frustrating for a lot of Bears fans, maybe second to the quarterback, but it's an issue. So if you had to rank these three things in order of what the biggest problem is, how would you rank them? The coach's commitment to the running game, the offensive line's inefficiency or ineffectiveness in blocking it, or the running back's inexperience in executing, you know, the running plays once he has the ball?
I would say the offensive line's ineffectiveness blocking it is number one, and you could add up number two and number three, and it would not equal number one. I think the offensive line, when you look at the difference between how the Raiders just physically repositioned Bears defenders on the field and how the Bears are incapable of doing that, and it's not just against the Raiders, the Bears do not move guys off on the offensive line. They don't move them. They do not do a consistently good job of double-teaming interior linemen and getting, you know, creating that initial lane and then climbing to the second level and making sure everyone is blocked. So for me, it's number one, offensive line. I would say number two is the coach's commitment to it, but he's obviously not committing to it because of number one. And then I feel like number three is sort of an incomplete, because he just hasn't had enough holes in, you know, to run through, you know, David Montgomery specifically. He hadn't had enough holes to run through in order to really give us a long look at what he's capable of. And they've just got to block better, and I don't know how they're going to just flick the switch on, because it's not like you can replace your entire offensive line in a bye week.
I was talking to Dave Wannstedt yesterday, who at one point coached special teams, I believe, in Tampa, and I was saying to him, why even go after that punt? Why even have anybody attempt to block a punt on fourth and sixth? And they didn't have a block on because it was basically one guy coming. And he said, and I thought this was a good answer that I hadn't heard before. He said that you always have to leave one guy back. You don't want him to obviously roll into the kicker, but you have to leave a guy in case there's a bad snap, in case the ball goes through, in case something goes awry in the backfield, the punter doesn't catch it, whatever it might be. And these things happen quite often. If you're back for return, you need someone that can get the kind of sudden turnover if indeed that is what happens.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But as you're looking at what Kevin Pierre-Louis did, I think he could be in that position to account for whatever mistake
without
that Lonnie's talking about.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to leave his feet like that.
Yeah.
He left his feet, and then he subjected himself to being blocked into the punter. I thought he was blocked into him. I thought that was kind of obvious, too. It's obviously not a reviewable play, but I thought he dove, was blocked, and then he rolled into the punter. But he subjected himself to that referee's decision by leaving his feet. He could have just kept his feet and gone back and, you know, gotten in on the return. So I asked him after the game, I was in the locker room right there, said, Kevin, you know, why are you diving at the punter there? And he said, quote, I'm a great special teams player. That was the first sentence he said. That's a direct quote. I'm a great special teams player. And then, just paraphrasing, the next sentence was, you know, I'm trying to make a play for my team. Okay. You know, the play got away from him. He made a mistake. And it was costly. It probably cost him the game.
Rich, when you look at Trey Burton, I think that obviously he had the health issues during training camp and early in the season. But when he's been on the field, he hasn't made an impact the way that he's paid to and the way that maybe you expected him to based on last season. What is it? Is it health? Is it just the function of the offense struggling, combination of everything? What is it?
Yeah, I have a hard time with this one because the one thing for me about Burton is that you don't consistently see him open. And then the question becomes, is that because he's physically not at 100%? Is it a schematic thing? I mean, I don't think defenses are devoting attention to taking Trey Burton away. So, you know, is it just that he doesn't beat man-to-man? He did convert a third down in the second half of that game Sunday where he came across the formation. It was third and eight, third and nine or something like that. And Chase Daniel dumped it off to him and he got yards after the catch. And that's the type of play that makes me think, okay, he can help. He's healthy. He can run. He, you know, he's out there. He can go adjust to a low throw, turn up the field, gain yards after the catch. That he is healthy. He can move. What are they not doing to get him open? And I have a hard time in this passing game really, you know, watching it and looking at, all right, are guys not being schemed open? Or are they just not getting open when they are one-on-one? I mean, even their best plays against the Raiders, let's say the Anthony Miller catch. Miller's not open. He just made himself open with a great play. Allen Robinson is consistently getting open. He's been exceptional, but he's the only one. And so for me with Burton, it kind of goes to this bigger issue of why aren't more guys open all the time? And I don't know the answer, but I do think he can run, and I think he's healthy enough that he should be producing more than he is.
Yeah, and he's not alone. I mean, they're not getting anything out of Tariq Cohen. They're not using him correctly. I thought Patterson would have a lot more big plays. I thought he was the new secret weapon. There was a lot of guys on that offense. You know, Anthony Miller. There were a lot of guys that you thought were – it's Allen Robinson and nothing.
There are no big plays except for Allen Robinson.
Right.
That's it.
It's baffling because – you could go through every one of those guys that you just listed, and you could have a whole show, you know, just taking up the time for each player. It seems like they've got 10 different problems that need their own attention. Players not producing, and why are so-and-so not doing his job? You know, I think it starts with the running game, that they have to be able to run to open up the pass. Teams can do it another way, but the Bears don't have the quarterbacks to do that. To me, their problems on the offensive line start in the interior of the line between the tackles, that those guys are not blocking well enough. You know, Kyle Long, Cody Whitehair, James Daniels, that those guys aren't consistently run blocking well enough to get the offense unlocked in a way that that running game would. But I'm with you. I mean, you could look at Anthony Miller, for example, and how many times have we heard about him running the wrong route or not being detailed enough with his route. I mean, you don't have to read between the lines to understand that there's a coaching problem with Anthony Miller, that he is not responding to whatever, you know, playbook or plays, whatever the coaches are asking him to do, that it's inconsistent there. The Tariq Cohen thing, I mean, he is one player that opponents will look at every week and account for in a way that maybe Anthony Miller's name doesn't jump off the page. And, you know, we haven't seen Tariq in the screen game get off or anything like that. They've had to use him out of the backfield probably a little bit more than they want because they don't believe in Mike Davis, apparently. And so that was, you know, something that hasn't followed through in what was advertised about this offense in the offseason. So I'm with you. This is a busy bye week for Nagy figuring out all of these issues with each of these players because collectively it just amounts to, Allen Robinson and nothing else. Unless they get two or three takeaways a game and three short fields, they're going to be in a dogfight every week and they're not going to go to the playoffs like that.
Rich, thanks a ton. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Rich.
Have a great week, guys.
That's Rich Campbell from the Chicago Tribune.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.